So, hi, this is Dave Weiner. It is Friday, October 12th, 2018. So, I've had people question over the years, many, many times, why I do the kind of development work that I do. And more often than not, they just completely get it wrong. And they don't understand me. And it's a little bit frustrating and actually more than a little bit shocking. Because I think my motivations are actually incredibly transparent. They really are what I have been saying they are all along. And for whatever reason, people layer on top of that some very cynical view of the world that seems to think that this could not possibly be what it is that motivates me. So I thought that I would just try once and for all, maybe, hopefully, I don't know, just to say it in a podcast, and maybe from tone of voice, you'll actually believe me. I don't know. Anyway, the thing that I have, for whatever reason, I think it's a programming ethos, actually. It's, I've never gone for lock-in, and I just think lock-in is antithetical to computers. If you want to lock users into using your software, then I really think you should be doing something else, because you're missing the point of these things. It's sort of like building a car. Let's say you were a guy who builds cars, right? So let's say you built a car that could only go around traffic circles, but couldn't go on city streets. Well, that wouldn't be a very useful car, would it? Because even how would you even get to a traffic circle, right? So the whole idea of a car is that it gives you this freedom to move wherever you want to move. And, you know, as long as it's in fundamentally two dimensions, not three, cars can't elevate. They can, if the land elevates, they can elevate, but it's still basically a two-dimensional thing. As long as there's a road that goes between the two places you want to go, you can go there. And it's always possible that in a few years, somebody will build a road that goes to the place that you want to go, and then you can drive your car there, because that's what cars are designed to do. They're not just designed to go around one kind of structure or one brand of structure. I don't even know. The whole idea of a brand of road is ridiculous. But yet in software, we don't think it's ridiculous. But it depends, I guess, on how you view software. One of the things that I used to say a long time ago was that computers were for communicating. And today, of course, that would seem like a silly thing to say, right? Of course they're for communicating. That's the only thing they're really good at, right? Well, this wasn't always known. And in fact, in the 80s and the 70s, it was actually kind of like a blank stare type thing. People, you'd say it to people and they would just look at you like, what do you mean? So I came up with another. I said, well, communication with a big C, meaning like it's for communicating between people's brains as opposed to literally communicating. So that even if you didn't have the networks that I was sure would come at some point, universal, accessible everywhere, I mean, it took a lot of steps before that happened, and there was an awful lot of lock-in along the way that prevented the natural things to happen. I mean, there's a fantastic example of that. Apple, in a very visionary thing that they did in the Macintosh, was right from the beginning, actually I think it was a year after the Mac was initially rolled out, 1985, from that point on, which was 1 year after it was rolled out, from that point on, every Mac had built-in networking. And it was easy networking too, and it was good and very appropriate for the technology for the time frame we were in, 1985. Incredible, right? And but they made the API was opaque. I honestly came to the conclusion that it would be impossible to actually build software that ran against that API, unless you were friends with the guy who was in charge of networking at Apple, a guy by the name of Sidhu, S-I-D-H-U was his name. And so there was there were like three different kinds of email apps, and that was it. And there were a few hacks here and there. I was able to get a little bit of stuff working, but I really kept hitting dead ends that would make it impossible for me to do what I eventually did when HTTP came out. But imagine if the Mac had had, in 1985, as simple an API as HTTP. You know, I don't think there'd be an internet, and I don't think there would be any devices on the net that we all use that weren't compatible with the initial Macintosh. The protocol of the what we would be calling the internet, which would be something quite a bit different from what we're using right now, would have been what was early defined by Apple. Of course, Apple would have had other ways they could have shut it down, and probably, knowing Apple, they probably would have. You know, but it made laser writers possible. That was the big innovation, and it was a huge thing. And you ended up having a sort of precursor to the web, which was called desktop publishing, and it allowed people to publish newsletters, print newsletters, using vastly less expensive technology than they used to. Can you hear this? This is the construction project. It's the most annoying thing in the world. Whatever, deal with it. So I kept having my nose rubbed in this over and over and over again, because right from the beginning, I was raised in, you know, my first really great experience with computers was on Unix in the mid to late 70s at the University of Wisconsin. And it was an incredible, I mean, the stake that those guys put into the ground was, I'm sorry, but we're going to give away the source code. And all the protocols we do are, we're just going to factor and factor and factor until they're as simple as they can possibly be. And so there was a stack, and same thing with their source code for the operating system. It was this incredible thing. A goal that I aspired to achieve someday, to write code that was that, I would say, poetic almost, in the sense that it reflected exactly what it was doing. There was no sort of legacy in it. It was, they had gone back and rewritten the thing, obviously, over and over and over again, until it was that simple that it couldn't get any simpler. And maybe I'm idealizing it, because this is a long time ago, and you tend to, I don't know, let's not go there. But it was a formative thing. It was the reason I fell in love with computers. I mean, initially, before that, I had had some experiences programming where I could sort of sniff out that this was possible. And it wasn't just Unix, by the way. It was the stack that Unix was built on top of that included TCP/IP, that included the PDP-11 instruction set. There must be other things in there that never reached the surface that I work on, you know, layers. Technology is layered. Well, the only way you can build really big, tall layers of things is by not adding a lot of complexity with each additional layer, because there's a limit to how much complexity a human mind can deal with. And so you want to have these plateaus, these, we call them platforms actually, these layers in the stack, where you can just understand everything above that layer and let the other guys worry about what's below it, you know? And so how do you accomplish that? Well, you do it by factoring. You do it by rejecting complexity at every stage. And you do it by a combination of being willing to go back and redo it and an impatience that you need to write code, so you need to get on with it. So you have to strike a balance. You're never aiming for perfection. That was something I wrote this the other day, that that when you give up on attaining perfection, that's when you can really start getting stuff done and when you can really start feeling good and happy, because you're never going to do it. You'll freeze something and then a year later you'll look at it again and go, why did I ever do it that way? That was the stupidest thing, you know, right? You look at it, but then you go, well, you know what? But in the intervening year, I never had to look at it. So I'll just go ahead and put it back in its little corner and let it do its thing because it's working, you know? And so in my career, and this, a lot of this seems to be forgotten, but it's still really who I am and how I got here. I have built some pretty tall stacks and gotten to some places that I'm pretty sure nobody else has ever gotten to in terms of building stacks of technology that don't use up all the necessary complexity and create these platforms and these layers. So that you can build higher and without overload. And so people think, oh, well, you know, you did RSS because you have like a huge ego and you wanted to spread your seed all over the place or something. Or this is like a huge business and you're making shitloads of money, which is contradicted. Not only didn't I make any money off of RSS, it cost me money. I spent money on RSS and I didn't get it back. And it's okay. I don't care. I really, you know, this is another thing. I mean, you think I'm motivated by money? I'm not motivated by money. I've had people say this to me, is that you're just like, you're in it for the money, right? Or it doesn't quite come out like that. What they do is they treat RSS as if it was a product, and they think you're going to defend it as if it were a product. So they look at me and say, oh, you know, RSS is dead, right, huh? Then they expect me to disagree with them, right? And it's really, you know, it's annoying. Let's put it that way. Because what I would like to say to them is, look, if RSS is dead, which... it's a ridiculous concept. Something was never alive. It can't be dead. You need to pick your words more carefully. Stop using these metaphors because it ain't working. Even the whole idea of it, if it were dead, why does it keep coming back? You know, because it ain't. But what I wanted to say to them is that if it is dead, you lose just as much as I do. I don't lose any money because of this. It doesn't really limit what I can do because nothing says I can't keep using it even if it's dead, right? It's still doing what I wanted it to do. And so some of the fights that happened around RSS at different points, and the fights did eventually stop, by the way. So whether you think the fights clearly were not important because progress continued even though the fighting stopped, right? That it's why I was always saying, look, I'm not just throwing things in here for the sake of throwing them in because a few people think it's a good idea to throw these things in here, because I'm using up complexity when I do it. And you know, that's why RSS is so simple. It's because it didn't need to be any more complicated. It did its job. It was basically done. There wasn't anything else for it to do. And so why keep working on it? You know, because you're just ripping up the pavement and you're saying, look, we have to put off the actual implementation of features built on this stuff until we're finished ripping up the pavement, because you don't ever want to go back and redo this stuff just because somebody decided to change from, you know, one way of organizing the stuff to a completely different way. And so that's it, really. I mean, I build things, I really want to build utility. It's really what I've always been focused on. I want to get to a place where I've got something that I can use that's new and enabling and really, really great for communicating and, most important, can be built on itself. So it has to have that sort of ability. I don't want to build things that are dead ends. I don't want to build bridges that go nowhere. I want to build things that then I can come back a year later and say, well, wouldn't it be cool if this could also do this, or if I could just reuse this thing here that I built 5 years ago, and now I don't have to do that again because I have the problem solved, and I just plug it in. Now I built something that I could have never conceived of back then until I actually had this stuff working and mature and burned in and established and in the market so people can use it, you know. I think I learned quite a bit about doing this because I achieved quite a bit of success at it, you know. And I don't think people only understand success in terms of making billions of dollars. But I, you know, I have made a fair amount of money in my life, but I've made enough money, not too much money. Once you reach a certain level in terms of having your basic needs, I've written about this. People obviously don't believe that I believe it, but I've written about it a long time ago, is that there really is only so much utility of money. And almost anybody can tell you this, that if they have actually had their dreams fulfilled in terms of money, then it has limited utility. It can buy you food, it can buy you a nice place to sleep, it can buy you a nice car and trips every once in a while. You can have a great car, you can have a great room, you can take nice trips. And after that, there really isn't a whole lot more that money can do for you. And so people sort of make competitions about how much money you have, but it's really artificial. One could easily have competitions by how much have you created technology that other people have been able to build on, that actually people did build on and created wonderful things with. You see, that one I think I won. I think I won that in an incredible, coup d'etat, tour de force. I mean, do I really have that much in the way of competition? Well, Tim Berners-Lee certainly did more of that, right? I mean, Tim Berners-Lee had a great idea, and he said, let's just try it this way, and boom, it worked. Steve Wozniak, another one of these guys who, and I benefited, by the way, enormously from both of these guys' works. I mean, I can't underestimate that. Dennis Ritchie, the guy who gave us Unix. Wonderful. I mean, boy, these are all people who had huge influence and who shared what they created in this ethos. Not the ethos of making a shitload of money, although Woz certainly made a lot of money. And I think Tim Berners-Lee is doing okay. I think that Tim Berners-Lee would like to have a lot more money, but he's doing good, as far as I'm concerned, because there's all kinds of things that matter, not just money. I mean, he's got his own institute at MIT. If he wanted to start a curriculum in some interesting idea, no doubt he could do it. I mean, that's something most of us can't do, I think these guys have been enormously successful, and I think that they've been successful in a dimension. People like to look at Steve Jobs, but I don't really know what Steve Jobs did. I know he gave really good keynotes, and I assume that ability to give those keynotes worked for him inside of his company. I had a few, our paths crossed a few times. I certainly was a developer for Steve Jobs' platform, but I think I was really more of a developer for Steve Wozniak's platform, to be honest with you. Because the really good things about Apple's platform were following that ethos, not whatever it is, Steve Jobs' ethos was. So, anyway, I feel pretty good about what I've done. I am a little bit frustrated that people keep reading me wrong. I'd like to find other people that work on that same ethos, because that's exactly what it's about. It's about working with other people. If people have the wrong idea about who you are and what your motivations are, then they shy away from working with you. And I think some of the people who have wanted to felt threatened by my work, let's put it that way, understood that I would be stronger if more people worked with me, and so they we're now learning on a global scale of how effective the internet is for spreading fake news, right? Well, it's always been that way. It's not a new thing. It's just, it's now a global thing as opposed to just within geek communities. Anyway, that's who I am. Just want to make software, really. And work with other people. Not just other geeks, by the way. I want to add that, too. I really get more of a thrill out of working with really smart users. Because I've been... You see, I just want to make this one more point. If I'm doing work with really smart users who are very ambitious, who want to use computers in incredibly powerful ways, look what I just did. I created a platform. You know, the best platforms are the ones that enable new people to do things. And on that one, I think Steve Jobs got it right. But that's also a Woz ethos, too. Woz definitely believes in that. You know, but Steve Jobs said fractional horsepower computers. And that was a really sexy idea. And I don't think that one came from Woz. I think that one came from Jobs. A fractional horsepower computer, a fractional horsepower X is the idea. Is let's make these things human size. I think the tech industry has been going the other way for too long now. It's time for it to swing back the other way. We need to remember that people we're doing this for are people, not ad agencies, whatever, or the NSA, aggregators, people who treat humanity as if it's a undifferentiated slurry of ground up Soylent Green. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.